everyone, it's Zoe on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org. Thanks for listening to this roller coaster of moods and genres from 3 to 6 p.m. We heard Solaris in Trance, The Breeders with Do You Love Me Now? Something new from Lolina, Deja Vu, Opals, Grains of Sand, some Sea Fill in the mix with Charlotte's Mouth. My good friends, Love Spirals Downwards, Avincenna, and Ear Trumpets, Last Bus Fever, The D Revolutions with Different, and Absolute Body Control's A Better Way. You know, Mobius, Redelius, coming together for the magic of Broken Head. Till next time, thanks, Olivia, for having me guest while you're hopefully having a brilliant trip in Australia. Means a lot, all of you hanging out and chilling with me for these 3 hours, and I'll catch you next week. Be well, sending you deep, calm, and yeah, inner tranquility is the vibe from now until I see you next. Thank you.
evening, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Tectonic. My name is Mark Hurst. I'll be your host for the next hour here on WFMU, Freeform Station of the Nation, coming at you live from downtown Jersey City in the great state of New Jersey. I'm happy to be here and so glad you decided to spend your evening or afternoon or morning or whatever it is with me and the other Tectonic listeners here on WFMU. I've got a great show for you today. Really great. Chris Gilliard, who's been on the show a couple times in the past, is on tonight. Chris, if you've listened to this show, his past interviews, you'll know he is a scholar. He is focused on surveillance and the effects of technology, especially the big tech platforms and all of us. Basically, a very similar set of interests to my own as I put the show together. We always have a good conversation. Along the way, Chris and David Golumbia wrote a piece a few years ago, sadly, the late David Golumbia, talking about what Chris calls luxury surveillance, which is the idea that if you are privileged enough to walk around with a surveillance device on your wrist, which is to say an Apple Watch, you may not be thinking about the close similarities between the surveillance device on your wrist and the surveillance device on the ankles of people who are much less privileged. So let's call that an ankle bracelet. You can find that online. But we're not talking about luxury surveillance exactly this evening. We're going to be talking, Chris and I are going to be talking about AI. Because Chris, on his social media accounts, is often linking to these really topical and timely articles about AI and other tech topics as well. But we're going to focus on some of the articles that Chris has been commenting about that have to do with artificial intelligence. And they're all, I'd say they're well worth your time to know what's happening. So Chris will have his reaction, I'll have my reaction, and you can have your reaction too. If you go to the live listener comment board at WFMU.org, you can click playlists and comments. And also on that playlist, you'll see links to all of the articles, I believe I got all of them on there, that Chris and I speak about during the interview. If you're listening in the future or to a podcast version, go to the Tectonic website at tectonic.fm. That's T-E-C-H tonic.fm. And click the playlist link for May 13, 2024. Let's go ahead and listen to my interview right now with Chris Gilliard. As we talk about AI stories in the news recently and why they're so important. And again, you're listening to Tectonic on WFMU. Chris Gilliard, welcome back to Tectonic.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's great to have you back on the show, Chris. It's been too long. You have been on the show a couple times in the past talking about surveillance, big tech platforms. You have explained your phrase luxury surveillance that you coined a few years back, which I use a lot. And you have recently been writing on social media about a number of dystopian tech news stories. Sorry, was I redundant there? Tech news stories that I thought we should talk about because you have a great eye for identifying the most hair-raising and depressing news every day and, in all seriousness, putting the tech news in a helpful context for those of us who are trying to follow along. So I thought maybe we could go through some of the news today.
Yeah, that sounds fantastic.
All right, let's start with Sam Altman. Sam Altman, the CEO at OpenAI, close partner with Microsoft and maker of ChatGPT, as well as other generative AI tools. Sam Altman seems to be on a perpetual press tour, whether he's at Davos or other places talking to heads of state or major media sources, pumping up the perceived importance of everything that OpenAI does. And he said something recently to the MIT magazine, Technology Review, that AI should know absolutely everything about you, every email, every conversation. So talk us through this, Chris. That doesn't seem like a great idea, but can you explain what Altman is talking about and why he wants to surveil every inch of our lives?
Yeah, so I should say from the outset that I'm a bit surprised that he actually said this out loud, right? It's a thing that I've observed for a long time when these guys talk about the sort of next wave of what they call AI is some kind of digital assistant, right? Your AI concierge. And so Altman said, you know, a paraphrase, that in order for your AI assistant or your concierge to work, it would have to have access to all of you. Every conversation, every email, every text, all those things. And it's interesting, again, like it's very interesting that he said this out loud because he sort of gave the game away. And the other part of that, it was either later in that interview or in a subsequent interview where he also mentioned the AI assistant, where he speculated that maybe your AI assistant would testify against you in court.
Yeah, this was a Forbes article that came out around the same time. Quote, Altman mused that AI might, for example, testify against you or get subpoenaed by a court. That will be a new thing for society to navigate.
So let me get this out of the way. I don't think a thing like this can work, right? Like, I think that, as you said, pumping up, I think it's a process of pumping up the technology to just line everyone's pockets. But let's set that aside for a minute. And if it were to work, in order for it to do the things that Altman's claiming his could do or Zuckerberg's claiming his could do, it would need access to every bit of your life, every text, every email, every conversation, your medical records, on and on and on, like any bit of data that constitutes you. And, you know, we should also add, it would need the other end of those exchanges. So every text that you had would mean at least one other person on the other end, every conversation, all those things. And so it would not only be complete and total surveillance of you, but it would be complete and total surveillance of everyone that you came into contact with. This doesn't sound enjoyable to me. I mean, there's all kinds of problems. And, you know, Altman, again, and I think a weird moment of being honest, points out that these things would be incredibly useful to authoritarian governments, to law enforcement, to hackers, to anyone who wanted to leverage information against you in a way that you didn't intend or wouldn't enjoy. But this idea that these systems are going to become autonomous agents, which we can send out into the world to do our bidding, you know, it really, again, as I say, gives the game away into how a lot of tech people think about, you know, what it is they want with technological systems, which is essentially a slave.
Yeah. Did you ever see that video called something like Never Talk to Cops?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
It's this defense lawyer. It was recorded maybe 10, 15 years ago. It was this defense lawyer giving a talk. And his message was, no matter what, don't ever speak to cops. And he wasn't saying it from a place of, you know, cops are terrible or whatever. There was a cop in the room who came up after him and said, yeah, he's pretty much right. Because anything you say can, as the saying goes, can be used against you in a court of law. And if people haven't seen that video, I'd recommend it to them. I'll put it in the show notes. But here's the thing. As you point out in your gloss on this Sam Altman news, Sam Altman wants to turn AI into a cop. And not just any cop. This is a cop that's then listening to you and using everything that you say, type, text, whatever, as potential evidence that can be used against you in court.
Right.
As Altman says, this will be a new thing for society to navigate. I'll say, because he's making a cop that's then going to make all of us liable for every single word that we utter or write for the rest of our lives in any future context. That's an authoritarian's dream.
And think, for instance, right? Again, this is speculative, but if we think about how these systems work, would someone with access to your AI concierge be able to query it and say, give me all the incriminating evidence to support that this person has done X, right? Give me all the terrible things that this person has done, you know, whatever it is. And these systems hallucinate, right? What they call hallucinate, right? They fabricate information, which, as I understand, many, many, many experts in these systems have suggested that the problem with these systems making up information is not one that's likely to be solved, if at all, not anytime soon, right? So these systems fabricate information. Would they fabricate information about you? And so there's all these ways in which these systems would not only be potentially harmful, would not only work in some carceral fashions to further the authoritarian aims, not only in this country, but in other countries. It's a small scale example of, I think, how OpenAI has introduced these chatbots into society, right? Which is to basically throw these things out there, to unleash them into the wild, to see what kind of harms that they may or may not do, sometimes address them, sometimes not. But to unleash them under the guise of, well, society needs to figure out how they're going to deal with this.
Exactly.
Which is so irresponsible that I just cannot comprehend. And so, yeah, when he says, well, that's a thing that society needs to deal with, and as you and I have talked about many times, what that does is offload the responsibility of the company that has put out the technology, right? My assertion would be that if you're going to unleash a technology, that these are kinds of things you need to think through before you set it out into the world.
Of course. Yeah, they get to enjoy all of the profits or the investments, the rise in stock price and so on. And then they socialize the harms and say,
right. Yeah, absolutely.
You get to figure it out. Well, that's Sam Altman. So, one other thing I want to say about this is that even if people say, well, I would never get Sam Altman's AI assistant, it still doesn't protect you, because all you need to do is be in microphone range of anybody else,
right,
who has Altman's assistant. You're on record.
Yeah, this is a big thing with privacy studies, right? That so many people from, you know, Kate Crockford as Daniel Citron have talked about, that privacy is relational. You know, we only have any measure of privacy to the degree that other people in our network have it. I mean, it is a very dystopian scenario. I think it's played out with a lot of these wearables too, right? These pendants that record everyone's conversations, and these other devices. What are the Facebook glasses called?
I call them the Facebook surveillance glasses, but I don't think right. That's the official name.
You know, or that the Humane pin that bomb.
The AI pin from Humane, yeah.
Right. You know, the next step that these companies have tried to push onto us is devices that perpetually and consistently record, you know, either audio or visual signals, to the extent that no one's kind of free from them.
All right, let's keep going. Data centers. I have covered data centers on some recent shows, the explosive growth of these things. It comes up now on almost every show. There's some tie to the enormous draw of energy and water that these things are taking. And you pointed out an article with the headline, "Data Centers to Run Out of Power in 2 Years," says DigitalBridge CEO. And I guess DigitalBridge is in the data center business, and the CEO says, quote, "We're kind of running out of power in the next 18 to 24 months.
Yeah, laugh to keep from crying at these things.
So what's going to happen there, Chris, I have a guess of what's going to happen, but what do you think happens if the power grid gets strained so much that the data centers, which are holding all of our surveillance data and processing it and rendering it for further analysis and action by the big tech giants and their government partners, what happens if the power starts to run a little thin on that operation?
Yeah, well, rolling blackouts for us, right? Like, I joke, but, you know, Some of this goes back to Altman. Altman has said something to the effect of, given the demands of
Large language models.
there's going to need to be some massive technological breakthrough in how we produce power, right?
You know, he said this at Davos. We're going to need a break, just like you said, we're going to need a breakthrough in fusion. And here's what I didn't understand at first, but I've since learned. He has a major investment in a fusion power company and a
Of course
startup.
he does. I mean, what we see that, I mean, like, coal plants are being fired back up. Some of these companies are in discussions to purchase nuclear power plants. And there are some states that are inviting this, like Texas. And so I don't know what's going to happen, but I think that we've already started to see, in Texas, but in everywhere else, right? The demands on the grid due to climate change, which are only going to get worse, I say, in a bit of pessimism. And the other thing that comes up, right, or two that's important that you mentioned at the outset is the consumption of water. And I know that there are, I mean, this is probably not true in your audience, but there are lots of people who make the argument that the water is not consumed, right? But simply put, if the water is going to cool these systems, then it's not being used to water plants or being used to drink or things like that. And so it's a very scary scenario. Ultimately, I wonder too, what's the right way to say this? That a lot of this being in service of a system that is widely, some of the best use cases are for fraud, harassment, abuse, and putting people out of a job. So I'm not sure that that's a very good trade for humanity.
But other than that, I mean, other than those use
Yeah,
cases,
other than that, right? It's great.
on a recent show, I had two authors of the book Data Grab, and one of them, Nick Coldry, said, "I know something about data centers in England, in my area of London, or an area he's familiar with in London." He said, "They have stopped building any new housing
Oh, wow.
for something like 10 years. And the reason is there's not enough power due to the draw on the power grid from the data centers." That to me is the answer to what happens if, as the DataBridge CEO says, we kind of run out of power in the next 18 to 24 months. The answer is the data centers don't get lopped off, it's everything else. Gets their power restricted because it's already happening in different parts of the world where authorities are saying, essentially, our priority is number one, the data center and processing all the surveillance data that these trillion-dollar companies need. And then way further down the list is, if we need affordable housing, then, after the big tech giants are fully fed, then we can look at affordable housing and issues of that nature. And so it's grim, but I think we very well might be up against a wall on the power grid within the next 2 years, and we're really going to see where the priorities lie in this economy. I think we already know where they are.
And again, I mean, because of climate change, we've seen extremes both in heat and cold. Here in Michigan, I think it was 2 years ago, we actually had the governor, make a public announcement requesting that people set their air conditioning. We're having like an extreme heat wave. She requested that people set their air conditioning at a certain level in order to not strain the grid and have mass blackouts, right? Like massive loss of power, right? And, I mean, some people think of air conditioning as some type of luxury, but as we have these extreme heat waves, it's no longer a luxury, like if it ever was, right? But it's a thing that actually keeps people alive, particularly people who are elderly, people who are sick, immune compromised, things like that. And so again, like the convergence of these things, I think is really bad news.
Well, let's keep moving because we
Yeah,
haven't
if
depressed the
anyone's still
listeners.
with us, right? Because like I think each thing is grimmer than the last, right?
Okay, well, this one, I wish I could say this is on a lighter note, but Let's go to the next one anyway. This is from The Verge. Tesla vehicles kept crashing even after autopilot software updates, NHTSA says. So this is a story from The Verge recently about how Tesla kept having these problems with their autopilot software, the deceptively named full self-driving mode, in which a lot of people have been injured or even killed. And so Tesla said, oh, it's a glitch in the code. Here, we're going to push out an update to our autopilot code. And look, it's done. We've solved it. It was just a code problem. And yet it turns out that the National Highway and Traffic Safety Administration found that the crashes kept coming. Would you believe it, Chris, that a software update did not fix the underlying problem of Tesla's deceptively named full self-driving mode?
Yeah. Who could have guessed?
Who could have guessed?
Yeah.
Who could have told them that well ahead of time?
Oh, gosh. I guess I would take this opportunity to say, I think the myth perpetuated by multiple auto companies, you know, again, here in Michigan, they are starting to heavily invest in it as well. This myth of autonomous vehicles or self-driving vehicles, I think, has done tremendous harm to us all. And, you know, everyone on the roads is part of a test that they really didn't sign up for. I don't think that they're ever going to be safe. You know, I think a safer thing would be to change the way that we think about pedestrians, to change the size of cars, right? So that monster trucks are not crushing people's chest when they come into contact with them and things like that, right? There are multiple ways that we could make everyone safer who's on the roads and on the streets. I mean, other countries have started to figure this out, or have figured this out much better than we have. And I don't think the road to that is built by autonomous vehicles.
Yeah, years ago, I had Sam Schwartz on, who wrote a book about cars and urban design. And there was a section there on safety innovations, like real innovations that actually measurably saved lives. And they're mostly implemented in other countries. And they're all pretty low-tech solutions, you know, like better markings on some blind curves, for example, or better, I can't remember exactly, better lane markings. So there were some environmental improvements in the surroundings of the car. But then in the car itself, simple things like a proximity alarm when you're going to change lanes and you hear boop, 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 and that means there's a car in your blind spot. Mm-hmm. It's not full self-driving. It's pretty easy technology to implement. And those little implementations of technology can go a long way, as well as you say, the form factor of the car. Sam brought this up in the interview, that pedestrian injuries have turned into deaths by, I don't know if it's the millions, but by the thousands for sure, because where someone used to get struck in the legs, now they're getting struck in the chest because the grill of the cars and trucks and SUVs are so much higher now than they used to be. Not to mention the decrease in visibility when smaller human beings, that is to say children, walk in front of the vehicle. So make smaller cars, put in proximity monitors, mark the streets better. All of those could save lives. But what do? We go to Sam Altman, who says AI is going to save us. We go to Elon Musk, who says, yes, a code update will save us all. And the car companies in Detroit say, yes, we're going to follow these fools right over the cliff.
Yeah. I mean, I saw something even worse, which is the CEO of Uber, you know, floating the idea of partnering with Tesla and the move toward improving the autonomous vehicles. Right. If there ever were, there was an unholy alliance, right? It was Uber and Tesla.
You got your exploitation in my tech bro code.
Yeah. Right. Yes.
Now that's a reference that only people of a certain age are going to get.
Right. Yeah.
You know, we grew up in the right way, Chris. Can we just say we grew up in front of the television set watching commercials for national candy brands. Now that is how you're supposed to grow up in the U.S.
Yeah.
And we're back. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Tectonic on WFMU. My name is Mark Hurst. I'm your host. We are halfway, actually a little more than halfway, through my interview with Chris Gilliard, friend of the show, expert in surveillance and the effects of the tech platforms on our lives and work. Happy to have Chris back on the show this evening. We're talking about recent news about AI and why those developments are important to know about. Someone on the comment board asked, Fredericks on the comment board asked, is this the Gallows Humor Show? I wouldn't say it's the Gallows Humor Show. I'd say it's a Gallows Humor Show because Tectonic often has gallows humor, I think, because what are you going to do? You can either laugh or cry or shout. I guess I've done some of all those on this show. Anyway, I'll stop rambling. Let's go back to my interview now with Chris Gilliard here on Tectonic on WFMU. Chris, here's another story I wanted to ask you about from a few weeks ago. It's an essay you wrote in The Atlantic called The Deeper Problem with Google's Racially Diverse Nazis. This was a dust-up from earlier in the year when Google's Bard, their AI system, which I think maybe they've already renamed to Gemini out of embarrassment. But anyway, Google's AI system was refusing to generate certain demographics in their visuals. So for example, when people asked for pictures of Nazis, it did not generate any Caucasian faces. So there were black and brown Nazis, which of course, there weren't too many of those in the actual history of the National Socialists. So there was this wild and chaotic conversation in the media about where Google went wrong. And you had a very thoughtful response. What do you say is the real problem underlying Google's misstep here?
Yeah. So, you know, I think there's a couple things. I mean, I think what we're going through right now is that nobody really knows what these systems are for, right? Some of the most present and persistent use cases are fraud, harassment, abuse, you know, deep fakes, things like that. And so while they've been promoted and crammed into search engines and phones and apps and business applications, for the most part, there's not a compelling, to my mind, there's not a compelling prime use case. And so right now, they're mainly for, you know, they're a tool used to sort of play and make hypersexualized images and things like that. And also the dust up that you mentioned and I talk about in the article, a lot of that was driven by right wingers and trolls and people of that ilk. And so one of the questions I ask in the piece is, you know, are we really lacking in, do we really need more pictures, more historically accurate pictures of Nazis, right? Because like one of the questions that to me came up when this arose is, why are you asking for pictures of Nazis? Like, we already know what they look like. I don't need more pictures of them. Like, I would hazard the guess that society doesn't need more pictures of them. But the other thing is that, so Google has a long history of doing this type of thing. So the explanation I'm going to offer may offend like computer scientists, but I'm going to kind of give like a sort of layperson's explanation of what happened, right? As you mentioned, it was Google's generative AI when prompted. So if you ask for doctors, for instance, right, like it would just give you pictures of white people and things like that. And so the fix, as I understand it, right, like I think Google only knows for sure, but as some computer scientists have discussed, is that on the back end, right, sort of behind the scenes of the prompt that people would type in, they would append, you know, insert like black, you know, Asian, like whatever the case may be. So if I ask for doctor, like behind the scenes of the interface, Google would append insert black, right, in terms of classification, so that you would get some pictures of black doctors. They did this in a ham-fisted way, as they often do. And so when someone asks for Nazis, I mean, they got images of black Nazis.
Nah,
I mean, it's
that's pretty
offensive.
ham-fisted, yeah.
Yeah, it's offensive in a lot of ways that the right wingers who drew attention to it don't understand or did not acknowledge. But I think the bigger question is, like, what are these systems really for? I mean, I know that they can be used to create non-consensual pornographic images of people. I know that there's been a large push to put artists and creatives out of business, but I'm not sure what the positive use cases are. And it's not been adequately, that case has not been adequately made by the companies who are making these technologies.
That's what I appreciated about your essay, that you're asking a more fundamental question. I mean, yes, Google made a mistake in, as you say, a ham-fisted approach of just appending black or whatever to behind the scenes. But really the issue we should be looking at is what are we trying to build really with this giant global infrastructure to gather surveillance data and process it in different ways and render up what? I mean, what are the benefits that we're trying to build towards?
Yeah, I mean, I actually don't think they know either, but by the way, and that's why it's being stuffed into everything. I mean, that's why there's toothbrushes and light bulbs, right, that
With
they claim
AI
are
in them.
using AI, right? Like, I actually
Right.
don't think they know either. A lot of what drives the consistent narrative through our discussion, right, is a lot of what drives this is the, impulse of venture capital. It's a classic instance of pumping up something, and so that a certain wealthy individuals could make more money and the rest of us are left holding the bag. So I don't really think companies have a good sense of what these things are for.
Right.
And I, the other thing is, I think when we look at the ways that they're used to create child sexual abuse material, as I mentioned, deep fake porn, all kinds of ways of creating impersonations, misinformation, disinformation, how they threaten to overrun the internet with sludge, and make it in some cases impossible to determine what's real or what's historically accurate and what's not. When I add all that up on the one end of the scale, and I still don't know what the prime use case, positive use case is, right? My question is, why do these things exist?
I can't wait to see an eighth grader come into history class and say, I have just blown the lid off of World War II history. I'm gonna report on the secret history of black Nazis.
Yeah. And I mean, what's interesting too is that Google, like the issues with Google that you and I have, I think, are pretty well established. But for a long time, they had a product, right? The search engine that was so wildly successful that it became the verb for looking up information. They've started to submarine their initial product by stuffing it with AI that returns, questionable and inaccurate results all the time. So, I think that uproar with the racially diverse Nazis, I think, is a thing we're gonna keep seeing things like this,
Right.
because part of what I think drives people to play with these things is not that they're looking for accurate information, but they're looking to make it do something inaccurate or weird. And so it's going to keep spitting out these kinds of things.
Okay, one more, and this one is a little bit funny. This has to do with hauntings. An article in The Guardian, digital recreations of dead people need urgent regulation. So, AI companies want to make AI versions of deceased relatives, and who knows what sort of deep fakes that's going to lead to. And so, the Guardian article says there are fears that so-called dead bots could cause psychological harm to their creators and users or digitally haunt them. And I liked your comment on this article. You said having the AI version of your deceased meemaw promote the restaurant around the corner sounds like an episode of Upload.
Okay, so a couple of things. Have you watched Upload? I know you're not a big TV guy.
No.
Have you? Okay. It's a half hour comedy that is on Prime, which I cannot,
Why I haven't seen it.
Yeah. Which I cannot in good conscience promote.
Yeah.
If you find yourself with the ability to watch Upload, I think it's some of the same team that made The Good Place and Parks and Rec.
Okay.
It is about the most accurate version of like our digital dystopia that I think I've seen rendered to video. It's well worth watching. Part of the central premise is that when people die or when they're terminally ill, their consciousness can be uploaded into like a sort of digital heaven, but it's stratified according to what you can afford and all the ways that you might imagine.
Right.
Have you had Tamara Knopper on?
Tamara Neese.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
So Tamara wrote a book called Death Glitch. I have yet to read, right? It's on my list. I mean, I call it digital necromancy. I think what's one of the things that's interesting about these stories is that they often start out, or these articles, they often start out with people who are overcome with grief, who are using these, you know, dead bots or, you know, these technologies to in some way come to terms with their grief, right? And so I don't want to diminish that. What we know, though, of these companies is that much of their directive is to maximize profit. And so we will ultimately see a lot of the gross and really unfortunate abuses and leveraging of people's emotions to sell product that we see in all other aspects of our lives. And so, I mean, in the article, right, the paper they reference, you know, the thing I made a joke about, right, which is the idea that the interlude between, you know, the first half of your conversation with Meemaw and the second might be, you know, the interlude might be her hawking like some fast food joint that's around the corner or something like that. A company might, understanding that they have their hooks in you because you're trying to talk to your recently deceased child, right, might use that in ways to induce you to act in the interest of the company in terms of buying product or whatever it is. Like, we've seen this. We know that companies do things like this, right? We know that data brokers have categories like has a recently deceased child, is terminally ill, things like that. So I do not in any way want to take away from people who understand these things as a way of coping with their grief. I do understand that companies are mercenary in the ways that they will play on people's emotions and tap into their vulnerabilities in order to sell them things. You know, and it also gets into questions of consent, right? You know, I've been recorded and on video lots of times. The idea that when I'm dead, that a company would ingest that and create some, you know, digital doppelganger of me is a thing I would obviously never agree to. And so a lot of these questions, as the article pointed out, a lot of these questions have not been legislated or even kind of ethically fully reckoned with.
So what you're saying is if Meemaw tells you to eat at Wendy's, you're not actually going to do it.
Right? Yeah, maybe you get an extra minute with Meemaw with the coupon from Burger King.
Right. You know? Oh, man. Chris, how can listeners keep up with what you're writing, what you're thinking, what you're seeing day to day?
Okay, well, I am on Mastodon intermittently. I'm on Blue Sky, you know, while that lasts.
And the username on these social media sites is always Hyper Visible.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Chris, it's been a real pleasure. Thanks for being back on the show. And let's not let too much time go by until your next visit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always available. So, yeah, thanks for having me. And I definitely look forward to the next time.
And we're back. If you are just tuning in, you're listening to Tectonic on WFMU. My name is Mark Hurst. I will be your host for the remaining
let's call it 15, 16 minutes of the show. And then I want you to stay tuned for Dave Mandel, who you just can't handle. He's got a prog rock show coming up called It's Complicated, followed by Jim the Poet and Amanda, their show Bad Animals. Jim the Poet was on the comment board during the interview, singing the praises of our AI overlords and pledging his love to Alexa. Oh, Jim. And then after Bad Animals, Brother Daniel Blumen comes on at 9 p.m. Eastern with his eponymous show and takes us to midnight Eastern. Hope you'll stay tuned for all of that great programming and beyond here on WFMU. By the way, if you're listening to this on a podcast, you really deserve to give WFMU a shot. Just point your web browser, your non-Google Chrome web browser, at WFMU.org, and then just click, there's a big play button on the homepage, and just click that, and it's like, it's kind of like playing the lottery, because you never know what's going to come out of those speakers. It's free form, baby. It may just be something you love, and it's possible that it won't be, but then you wait an hour, and you try again, and, you know, again, it could be something great. Anyway, I'm a big fan of the station, as you can tell, so stay tuned. And I wanted to say thanks to Chris Gilliard once again for being on the show again. And as I said, I look forward to having Chris on the show in the future. It's always a great conversation. This was no exception. We were talking about AI, recent news in AI, and our emerging tech dystopia at the hands of people like Sam Altman and Elon Musk. And I hope you found that enlightening. And maybe a little bit enjoyable, I hope. There were some funny parts. It's not all doom and gloom. If you can laugh at some things along the way. One of the things that Chris brought up was Google's foray into AI. We talked about Bard, that is now called Gemini, and the issue of the racially diverse Nazis, as Chris put it in his Atlantic article. And I thought it'd be interesting to take a look at some of the other issues with with Google's AI. When Google first launched AI, I think this was last summer, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was sometime summer 2023. Google started adding AI results into its search, by which I mean you could... The idea is that you would be able to ask a question in natural language on the Google search box, and then an answer would come back just below the search box. And so I covered this after it was originally reported, and I think, again, it was August 2023. Someone had gone onto Google and had typed in the following search query. Again, just regular Google search query. Didn't go into some AI area. It was just a Google search with the following text. Countries in Africa that start with K. Okay, pretty easy, pretty straightforward. And here was Google's AI-generated response. While there are 54 recognized countries in Africa, none of them begin with the letter K. The closest is Kenya, which starts with a K sound, but is actually spelled with a K sound. It's always interesting to learn new trivia facts like this. Unquote. That was the whole response from Google, which, of course, makes absolutely no sense. And that's $2 trillion company there speaking at you with their new shiny toy. And I believe I saw on Mastodon recently that someone went back to Google and tried it again, that same search query, and they reported that it was still saying that there were no countries in Africa that start with K. I haven't verified that myself, but that was a claim that I saw online. I wouldn't be surprised. And then there was another one, and I put this one on the playlist, one of the playlist images this evening from May 9th, just 4 days ago. a Mastodon user. No, I'm sorry, this is from Blue Sky, a user named Timothy, who put in pasted in a screenshot. Again, I haven't verified this myself, but if this is to be believed, and I think it looks pretty legit to me. He says, "Love what Google is up to these days." And the screenshot shows a Google search box with the following query: food names end with "um," and "um" is spelled U-M. So he's basically asking, "What are some foods that end in the letters U-M?" And Google comes back with the following response: "Here are some fruit names that end with colon. Appleum, bananum, strawberrum, tomatum, and coconut." I mean, that's like, it's out of the Onion or something. I mean, that's really good comedy writing. Again, I don't think it's what a $2 trillion company is trying to show with their major investments that they've been making in the last year or so to try to catch up with everybody else, since AI is the new thing. You know, crypto was the thing the year before, and NFTs and the blockchain were the things the year before. But right now, AI is the thing. And so, of course, Google has to be trailing along, dumping millions of dollars into this fiery pit called AI. And you get appleum, bananum, strawberrum, tomatum, and coconut. Oh, man. Well, just one more reason not to use Google, as far as I'm concerned. There's like reason number a million, I guess. So that's what's happening in the world of AI, and there's some other stories that I wanted to get to, but Chris and I spoke about briefly, but for time purposes, I wasn't able to fit them in. But one of them was a story, and this wasn't exactly AI related, but there was a story about people having all over the world having problems with their insulin pumps. Recently, I think they were running out of battery all at the same time, and that posed a health risk. Well, why did all these insulin pumps from this one company all run out of battery at the same time on the same morning? And it was because there had been, I suppose, some sort of code update. Of course, your insulin pump these days has to be connected to the internet, getting code updates like a smartphone or something or any other surveillance device. And there was a bug in the code, and that had the pump continuing to stay. The battery was being somehow it wasn't being charged correctly, and so because of a bug in the code, the pumps didn't work. And that was just like another story. This came from 404 Media, I believe, in the last week about John Deere tractors, new model John Deere tractors that, of course, have to be connected real-time to the cloud. And they started having problems because the tractors, the little internet server on the tractor could not connect with the GPS satellite. And the reason they couldn't is because of that solar storm. Remember a few days ago, there was the Northern Lights were all over North America. There was this giant solar storm. And as some people had warned, some satellites were affected by the material coming off of the sun and hitting those satellites, and GPS went down partially or fully for some amount of time. And if you don't have GPS, apparently you don't have John Deere tractors, at least not the new models. So you just wonder, what else do we need to connect from insulin pumps to John Deere tractors? And as Chris said in the interview just now, toothbrushes and light bulbs, what else do we need to connect to big tech platforms in order to use? Can we just use a toothbrush? Can we just use a tractor? And yes, I understand all the value add of GPS and precision farming and all of that, but can't we just have, you know, tractors that go through the field, and if there's a solar storm, you can continue to do your farming? Can't diabetics get good care day to day without having to worry about code updates? There is a time and a place for code, maybe even a smidge of AI here and there, but to put everything onto the cloud and turn everything into a surveillance device is just it's just idiotic in the long run. It is just idiotic. And a few people are going to get very rich in the short term, and many, many, many people are going to suffer in the long term. And I don't think that's right. I don't think that's the right arrangement we should have in this economy or in any economy. So the more you know, friends, I'm hoping that this show gives you a little bit of awareness so you can decide what you want to do with this knowledge. But at least the first step is to understand what's going on and how these things connect. The last thing I want to bring up is not about AI. I just want to say a word about the Apple ad that came out a few days ago. If you haven't seen this, and I think most people have seen it, but if you haven't seen it, go online to a non-Google search engine and look up online something about Apple iPad Crush. This is an ad called Crush that came out of the highest levels of Apple leadership. I believe CEO Tim Cook signed off on this as well. And it showed musical instruments and books and cans of paint and creative tools all being crushed in a 2-ton hydraulic press. I mean, just we're going to destroy all the things you love. Crush. And when the jaws opened, you saw a stupid little iPad sitting there. And I think, you know, that is such a good metaphor for where big tech wants to take us. They want to destroy everything that we hold dear, that we almost take for granted, these tools that we depend on. And what they want to replace it with is their stupid little surveillance device. And again, there's a time and a place for digital technology. It's not that iPads themselves are evil or whatever, but the process of destroying everything in order to replace it with a stupid little iPad, that's wrong. And that's what I'm opposed to. I could say more about the Apple ad, but we're just about out of time. I want to remind you that you are listening to the greatest radio station in the world, WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County, and 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org. And my email is mark@WFMU.org. And let's see, homework for next time. How about this? Avoid Apple, abandon Amazon, forget Facebook, and whatever you do, get off Google. And I thought for our outro, we could hear from Hurst and Otsk, pretty topical tune for tonight's show. I hope you enjoy it. Have a great week, everybody. See you next time.
I see you. Sensors will show to my heart, 'cause it acts like a spy. You can't escape my eye. AI is watching you. It sees your every move. AI is watching you. With words, you swipe for love. You can twist it around. Baby, that ain't enough. 'Cause girl, I'm gonna know if you're logging in or logging out. Don't mind when you're hurting inside, 'cause you can't escape my AI. It's watching you. It sees your every move, baby. sees your every move. Oh, babe, AI, it's watching you. AI, it's watching you. AI, it's watching you. Yeah, it sees your every move. It sees it, AI, it's watching you.
What a voice on that guy, huh? And that can mean only one thing. It's time for It's Complicated, an hour of prog and prog-adjacent music. I'm the host of that show, this show, Dave Mandel. I'm here every Monday evening between the hours of 7 and 8 p.m. Welcome. Great to be here again. Hot on the heels again of Tectonic, Mark Hurst's program. And I'll be here till 8. Thanks for joining me. I'm going to start tonight's show with a recent-ish track from an English group. The notable thing, the most notable thing about this track, and it's you're going to hear it right at the beginning, so don't blink or you might miss it. This track starts off with a very clear, undeniable quote from one of my favorite Genesis songs, the peak, you know, classic Genesis, Battle of Epping Forest. I hope I'm not ruining the surprise or spoiling it for you, but you'll hear that lovely Genesis-ish organ riff at the beginning of this track. It's from a group called The Tangent. The group was formed in around 2002. This comes from a 2006 album called A Place in the Queue, and it'll be a track called GPS Culture. This is the group, The Tangent.
Machines. When I look around, we warranted word. We sample culture in small spoons.